or email michael at lmfm.ie. First off this morning, there are calls, renewed calls, for an investigation of allegations that former surgeon Michael Shine abused children in an orphanage in Drogheda. The Journal is reporting that two men have come forward separately in recent weeks to claim that they were sexually assaulted by the paedophile while growing up in the institution run by the Daughters of Charity nuns. One claims he was assaulted at least twice in the early 1980s, and the other alleged that he was abused multiple times during the late 70s and early 80s. Joining us this morning is Adrienne Riley, CEO of Dignity for Patients. Adrienne, good morning. Thanks for taking our call. Before we get into these current allegations, can you just give us a sense of how things have gone in terms of the numbers of people coming forward since the scoping inquiry? Has it increased significantly?
Good morning, Alan. How are you? And thank you for inviting us to talk about this new revelation. So, yes, so many things have happened since we last spoke to you and the victim spoke to you actually on the show, and since the information on the scoping inquiry became available. We have had 11 new people come forward, which is unprecedented in recent times. We would normally have around one person a week, and they're still coming forward. We're still getting calls to have interviews. So it's been non-stop, you know.
One would have hoped that prior to the scoping inquiry, we would have been in a position to draw a line under not just what happened in relation to Michael Shine, but other institutions, other allegations. It seems we're not quite there yet. Is there a fear that the current inquiry will not bring closure finally to this chapter in our history in this country?
Do you mean the inquiry into the religious schools?
Into religious schools, yes.
Well, that's a separate issue to what to our victims, completely separate. I mean, in one sense, of course, Gerard Murray was abused in the school and by Michael Shine. Mm-hmm. But as he requested, he doesn't want to partake in one inquiry and not partake in one in relation to the abuse that happened to him in the hospital at the hands of Michael Shine. So you have to have a separate and siloed investigation into Michael Shine. And I know you're thinking that this should be the end. You know, why aren't these things ending? And I'll tell you why, Alan, because they never began for these victims. 357 people engage with us. And that is the tip of the iceberg. As all of the other commissions and investigations have shown, the Ryan Commission showed that. Mm-hmm. And the scoping inquiry, the initial report, only 143 people engaged with the scoping inquiry directly, individuals. But the other 700 allegations of abuse or more were revealed in the religious orders information. So that's what we need to find out. Even though 357 people engage with us, what will be revealed when, if a commission of investigation is set up, not if, when, and these two men coming forward about the orphanage. That is, for the first time ever, we've heard this.
Well,
we've never heard this.
Okay, I'm going to get to that in a moment, but I'm just trying to understand that in reality, we can't see permanent closure because, as you say, we can't have an investigation unless individuals come forward. Individuals feel reluctant to come forward for a myriad of reasons. But are we getting any closer, or are we still just scratching the surface of this particular problem?
We're scratching the surface of it as long as we don't deal with it. Commission of Investigation allows people to come forward either publicly or privately. It also insists under statutory obligations that the relevant institutions, such as the hospital, the nuns, the guards, the North Eastern Health Board, must reveal all of the information they have. And all of these institutions and organisations had information and either did something or did nothing, but we don't know what, and we need to know, the victims need to know. So, yes, we're scratching the surface while we remain in the stalemate.
Any commission of inquiry, or any inquiry for that matter, must get to the truth. Obviously, must make recommendations, but also must point the finger for an individual or organisation to be held accountable. Because ultimately, without accountability, there can't be, and I hate to use this word, but there can't be closure or acceptance on the part of individuals who have made the allegations.
Yeah, there has to be accountability. And there's different forms of accountability. One is judicial accountability, or which probably will never happen now that Michael Shine is 93. The other is direct acknowledgement and recognition of the injustices that were done. And another is, you know, symbolic reparation, like an apology. And I'm telling you, many, many victims, all they want is an apology from the state. You know, recognition of the abuse that happened to them and an apology at state level, recognizing that it was allowed to happen.
And why the reluctance, do you think, for the an apology? Because is it an admission on the part of the state?
Well, the apology needs to come after all the other justice mechanisms have been exhausted, after a commissioner of investigation, where it lays out where all the institutional accountability lay and who did what and who didn't do what, and then recognition of that.
Okay, let's get to the current allegations which have been made. Again, two individuals have come forward. This is going to form part, I presume, of some statement that will be submitted by your organisation. Am I correct in that assessment?
Well, we're compiling a dossier to make available to the government in our application for a commission of investigation. We understand the Attorney General is already considering the Smith Review, which was the review done back in 2010, which was never released to the victims. But as part of a fuller picture, this dossier will be part of that. But we also need to meet with Simon Harris. As he said last week, they're preparing a paper to look at all the options, and that he is committed to a victim-centred approach. But that would mean engaging with the victims before they release a paper, not releasing a paper about them where there's been no engagement.
And what's your favourite option?
In terms of
what you want and what is best for the victims, because, you know, we have to have very defined and clear parameters in terms of getting to a point where all the issues are addressed and resolved without having come to revisit it again.
The victims have been very clear. Their red line is a commission of investigation, and if the Smith Review is released or a paper of options put forward, their preferred option is commission of investigation, victim-centred. And they want to draft the terms of reference along with the relevant parties, and they know what they're looking for. And that's a victim-centred approach to any investigation, and that's what they want.
Presumably you want the draft to be done in collaboration with whoever's going to be carrying out the inquiry or the requisite minister.
We'd like at least a meeting with Simon Harris to outline what the victims want, seeing as he's made two statements in the last month that Michael Shine was a vile paedophile. He's going to have a victim-centred approach, and he hopes to have a response to a commission of investigation in the lifetime of this government. So we now want a meeting with him.
Okay, the lifetime of this government could be very short if we were to believe reports that it could be a couple of months away before we go to the country. There is the fear that if that hiatus is there prior to an election, no work will get done, and this will be pushed down the road for another administration. Who knows who will be in the chair at that time?
Well, not necessarily. The Attorney General has the information in front of him. He's supposed to be considering it, and we're hoping that there will be some information made available. Simon Harris could meet us any time, and we have all the relevant information. These things take as long or as short a time as they're allowed. The experts in the room are the victims, and we're an organisation that's existed for 14 years. We have everything that's needed. So it's up to them.
Talk to me a little bit about the allegations which have been made in relation to the orphanage. The said individuals came forward when, and what can you tell us of what they said?
I can't tell you much more than what was said and what was reported in the newspaper, which was basically that because, you know, they come to us confidentially, but one of the victims said he would allow what he had told us be viewed by a journalist because he feels so strongly that this needs to be known. And basically, both victims have told us that when they were in the orphanage for a long time, both of them, of their childhood, that they were brought down by the nuns to Michael Shine, to a separate part of the convent where he abused them. So this is really, really serious. This is an orphanage on Fair Street in Drogheda where Michael Shine had his private rooms. Michael Shine was a general surgeon. So what was he doing in an orphanage? He wasn't a GP. He wasn't a doctor that would be seeing children. He was a surgeon that would be seeing children, as in going in to see was their health okay.
Can I ask you
It's kind of unbelievable and alarming. And, you know, we couldn't really believe what we heard, because if there was two, there's more.
Well, that's my point. What prompted these two individuals to come forward, number one, and number two, I would presume that it would encourage others to come forward who may have suffered the same fate as they had in the orphanage.
Well, what prompted them to come forward was all of the media that's been going on since the six victims, the initial four and the other two, came forward with their stories. And, you know, that's a trigger for so many people. And, you know, these men are young enough men in the sense that they're only able to really deal with what happened to them and speak about it now. And people need to remember that. It takes a lifetime for people to speak of the atrocities that they were subjected to. But going back to the orphanage, Alan, these children were in the care of the state as well as the nuns. They weren't separated. Remember, there was no separation of power.
No.
The nuns were paid money to take care of these children by the state. Okay? So they were wards of the state being minded by nuns. So this is what happened to them. So there is state accountability here, just as there was in the mother and baby homes, just as there was in the Magdalen laundries. Yet again, we see no separation of power and a very, very powerful man in the community allowed access to small children in an orphanage.
I read with some interest last week a statement from An Garda Síochána Síochána in relation to the scoping inquiry and them again making a plea for anyone who may have been touched by the sad and sorry events that happened during that period in our history to come forward, and they'd be dealt with sensitively and a very open and frank manner. What's your view in terms of how it's being handled from the point of view of people coming forward to be able to talk, to be able to get these things off their chest, and to be able to see some pathway where they may get some form of justice?
Well, I think, thankfully, we are in a time where, you know, there's recognition of all of this. And the guards are doing their best, I guess, to deal with issues of sexual abuse in Ireland, either non-recent or current. And we see that by, you know, the sexual units that were specialist sexual units set up. However, when one of these victims went to the guards that interviewed him, now this was years ago, told him to go and find the nun. And there's been a lot of issues with the guards for our victims over the years. Now, it's been getting better recently. I would advise anybody to go to the guards and make a statement, or come to us, and we as an advocacy group can go with you to the guards to make a statement. And they deal with it very sensitively in terms of, you know, partaking in that process. So, yes, please come forward or go to the guards or come to us if you want us to help you making a Garda statement, getting support, getting counselling. We offer a signpost to a counselling service that there's no charge. I think, you know, it's very important that people do that if they feel that they need that right now. People can come to us just for counselling if they don't want to make Garda statements or if they don't want to go to any other process like a solicitor. You know, so we can just be a first port of call in a gentle manner.
I'm sure you, as I have heard anecdotal testimony from individuals who you probably know who were in school at a certain period in time where abuse took place. Excuse me. And when we think of abuse, we tend to think of sexual abuse. But abuse is psychological. It is physical. And the number of people anecdotally who could tell you stories of them being physically abused in institutions and say to themselves, but you know, it's not the same as sexual abuse. What do you say to people like that?
No, I mean, the reality is people that even witness abuse are traumatized. And that this is well-researched information. It's not, you know, made up. And on the Liveline show, there was many, many examples of that, of people ringing in and saying...
It was horrific. It was very, very difficult to listen to over of 2 weeks.
I'm sure that people in the orphanage witnessed or knew about what happened, those children with Michael Shine. you know, and I think that that's what we need to explore as well. It's really just unbelievable that another religious order is involved in other forms of abuse besides schools, you know, in an orphanage where the children are most vulnerable. And I was thinking about this, Alan, and I was, you know, if you read the article yesterday, the victim that came forward said, it wasn't all bad. I was fed, I was watered, I had a roof over my head. And actually, I got upset at that. Because it's like some kind of colonial mentality of the state at that time. We can brutalize you, and then we'll help you, and we'll give you minimum benefits. And if we don't abuse you, you should be grateful. It's astounding. I mean, that man was grateful because he wasn't, as a child, he was grateful to be fed, grateful to have a bed, and grateful to have a roof over his head. If you were a child of the state, you shouldn't have expected the minimum and to be told that you should have been grateful that you had it. And that's actually what I find extraordinarily upsetting.
Okay, we leave it on that note. Adrienne Riley, CEO of Dignity for Patients, thank you for joining us. Michael.